Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, hello, everyone. It's great to have you with us today. I'm excited about today's show. I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine from the West Coast, Gavin Raiders, who is the co-founder and executive director of Planting Justice, a nonprofit that you're going to be learning about. It's based in Oakland, California, and it's dedicated to food justice, economic justice, and environmental justice. That's a lot of justice, and you know, if you've been paying attention to Begin With Yes, that we love that. Welcome, Gavin.
Hi, thanks, Paul. It's really nice to be with you today.
It's really great to have you. We should maybe explain how you and I connected. My partner was a good friend of yours growing up from the West Coast, and you're one of his best friends, if not his best friend. And he connected the two of us at a wedding a couple of years ago, and I got to meet you in Halle and begin learning about Planting Justice and just fell in love with what you all are doing. So.
Thanks. I mean, I had a chance to read an early draft of Begin With Yes, your wonderful book, Paul, and that was right when I was getting to know you, and it really summed up a lot of my own personal beliefs of what I was able to kind of accomplish in my work in the world, and it had a big impact on me. So I just wanted to let you know that and to thank you for writing it, because I know when you're in the process of writing that book, you don't exactly know how it's going to affect people in the world around you, and you're just putting it out there, really. And just want to let you know that it had a big impact on me.
Thank you for saying that, Gavin. I remember that now, and I sort of not forgotten it in the big scheme of things, but forgotten it in the moment. And I can remember that the draft you read was so early that it was only 12 pages long, and you gave me so many notes. And the format of the book is questions and answers, and you asked so many good questions. And so some of the questions in the final book are actually questions that you asked that challenged me to be more thoughtful about it. So I should thank you for helping write the book. How are things on the West Coast?
Things are great. The sun is shining, and it's nice and warm. I'm sitting in the sun, and it's good to be here. I love Oakland.
Well, don't rub it into to those of us on the East Coast, because the winter finally came up to New Hampshire, and we're freezing today. We've got our winter coats on and our gloves and our hats, and getting ready for the snow, which I'm sure is coming. Planting Justice, I think that is a great Begin With Yes story. And I want to ask you a little bit about how you and Halle made it happen. But before we get to that part of our conversation, tell us a little bit about what Planting Justice has become and what this organization is all about.
Sure, great, thanks. Well, Planting Justice is just 3 years old. We got started in 2009, and it was really something that came up of a deep discomfort of the situation that we're all facing in 2011 in the world that we're living in, a deep disconnect between really our bodies and nature, the land that sustains us, and food being a huge part of that. I've spent all of my life in urban centers where the connection that people have to nature and to the food that gives us life has really been severed. And that creates a ton of disease and discomfort in our communities. So really, Planting Justice has been an effort to reconnect people living in urban environments to that sacred process of growing food in community and having that be a source of personal transformation as well as social and community transformation. And so what we do is we empower low-income urban residents to transform whatever land they have available. Sometimes this is really small backyard plots or front yard plots. Sometimes it's school gardens. We work at high schools and middle schools in Oakland. Sometimes it's whatever community spaces are available. We've worked at senior centers, and low-income apartment complexes that have some community land sort of like in the middle of the apartments. And even at a local prison at San Quentin State Prison in Northern California, where, you know, we're not only growing food. Food, I like to say, you know, it's both a means and an end. You know, everyone needs healthy food to live a healthy life. And that's something that, unfortunately, many people in our inner cities don't have access to. You know, we have a food system that really leaves a lot of people out when it comes to being able to afford, you know, good, healthy, wholesome, organic food. And so not only are we trying to reconnect people to that sacred process of growing healthy food in community, but doing it in a way that can uplift communities and create real economic opportunities for people to, you know, view this as, you know, actually a career path, as to, you know, being involved in the green food justice movement as a career path. And so opening up those spaces for people to really come into their own as true leaders that they're meant to be. And so that's been the whole kind of purpose for us, is to really create that space where people can come in and recognize and fulfill what their true calling is, and in so doing, have tremendous ripple effects in their community.
Finish, Gavin, please.
Oh, at this point, we've built more than 100 gardens in the past 3 years, and we've created 10 living wage jobs starting at $17.50 an hour, and specifically focusing on people who have barriers to employment. So when people are coming out of San Quentin State Prison and paroling back to our community here in Oakland, they are the first in line for new job openings on our edible landscaping teams, as are some of the high school youth that graduate high school in preparation for going to college. Before they go to college, they also have priority working with us. So that's been really important, that economic justice piece.
The question that I was going to ask you, and I can't remember the word that you used, but you talked about, you know, people finding their passion or finding their purpose, maybe was the word that you used. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering what that process was like for you and perhaps you and Halei. I mean, did you grow up being concerned about food and gardens and justice for people?
No, I didn't. Not at all. Actually, the complete opposite. You know, growing up in downtown Los Angeles, and you know, I ate just as much fast food and drank just as much of soda as anybody. And I actually didn't have a single blade of grass in my elementary school. You know, so I definitely did not have access to environmental resources. I remember the first time I actually stepped into functional forest, like a living forest. I was 16 years old. I had never been outside of the city, and it had a tremendous impact on me. But your question is really important, and it's something that took many, many, many years of sort of self-discovery. You know, I've had really important teachers and mentors in my life that opened me up to what it means to work for social justice. And I remember at the start of the war in Iraq, I took a year off of school at UC Berkeley to do some community organizing, some work for a group called Peace Action, where really we just went door to door in cities across the country, talking to people about ways that we can collectively pressure Congress to end the war in Iraq. And obviously that wasn't successful, at least just until a couple weeks ago when the war officially ended. But that whole process of walking cities and talking to thousands and thousands of people had a really deep impact on me. Just that the whole experience of seeing, you know, the real issues that people are facing, and how our space and our land in cities is really not serving the basic needs of people, and those being, you know, healthy food and healthy jobs, being, you know, two of the most important. So just that whole process of, you know, of physically walking the cities and talking to people and really taking in how space is and isn't being used, really got me to start thinking about ways that we could have a more direct impact to meet our tangible needs with community organizing. So rather than only talking about issues that were going on internationally, which are very important, but how are we able to, you know, meet our needs as a community? And so that was really the sort of underlying thought processes that we were going through, both Halle, my partner, and I, as we started Planting Justice, really wanting to use the techniques of community organizing, even uh-huh. that door-to-door, you know, strategy of going out and talking to our neighbors about the real issues that we're facing as a community and ways that we can solve them together. And then thinking about reutilizing space and actually reclaiming land in our cities to meet those needs for healthy jobs and healthy food.
You know, Gavin, it's fun chatting with you about this because I don't think we've ever had this exact conversation before. But that, you know, I talked to so many people that are looking, trying to discover what their purpose is or what they should do for career, or and it's almost like you don't actually find that, in my opinion. It sort of finds you, and that you have to, and you actually gave a beautiful example. You actually begin to take steps. In your case, you were actually literally walking the streets, doing community organizing and knocking on doors. And through that process of just taking movement in a direction that seemed to be calling you in perhaps a very concrete way or a very vague way, but doing something begins to open you up to maybe having your purpose find you. Does that resonate at all with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, a big part of I think the message that you're getting across in your book is just being open, saying yes to whatever is coming your way. Because one of the things that I've learned, and I'm still young, 28 years old, and I'm happy to have learned this lesson young, is that we need to relinquish control. We don't have control over what is happening around us with people who are, you know, in our families or in our communities, you know, just what the world is going through. We don't have control over those things. The only thing we have control over really is how we respond to these outside influences. And so, you know, just being really open, and I think, you know, it's this idea of inner works and public acts that I've really been thinking a lot about from Gloria Anzaldúa, who I've been reading her works for the past few years, and she's had a big impact on me. And it's this idea that we really need to do the inner work in order to figure out what our true calling is. And that's a process, you know, and it's something that we really need to be patient with. But, you know, it's identifying those things that really strike a deep chord in us. And for me, it was, you know, just doing community work, you know, like recognizing that we're not powerless, and on the contrary, you know, all of the solutions that we really need to solve some of the most pressing issues of our time, you know, poverty and climate change and all the different forms of injustices that our communities are facing. We have all the answers here in our community. It's just a matter of creating those spaces for people to work together and to really have, you know, a tangible impact. So I think just being really open is so important to what is happening, and figuring out ways that we can really plug in and make a difference.
The other thing that you and LA have seemed to be able to do is not to be overwhelmed by the magnitude of the problem, but just sort of rolled up your sleeves and jumped in, and in a local arena began to make change happen in your community. And I think that
right.
human beings sometimes have a tendency to be overwhelmed by the magnitude of the
right.
challenge or the goal. And so we just stay in that stuck position. How do you remember mm-hmm. when things began, I guess you had this thought of an organization in your mind, and how did you take those first few steps to turn what was a dream into a reality?
Yeah, I think what you're touching on is really important, because what I've seen is a lot of you know, political activists and social justice activists really burn out over time. And I think a large part of that is due to not really recognizing where our sphere of influence is. So, you know, spending a couple years knocking on doors, trying to end a war that was taking place thousands of miles away on a problem that is so structural, a whole, you know, military-industrial complex is such a large structural problem that, you know, individually, you know, I didn't have any power to change really, and starting to recognize, well, where is my sphere of influence, and what actual changes can I bring about tangibly in the community that I live in to, you know, create positive and even replicable solutions. So I'm under no delusion that, you know, the work, the 100 gardens that we're building, you know, is going to itself, you know, combat climate change and things like that. But all we're working to do is show a new path forward, a new way of living more lightly on the earth and actually meeting our needs as a community so that other people can do it too. You know, so it's been really important for us to open source all of our work. So if you go onto our website at plantingjustice.org, we have all kinds of videos and educational how-tos. And I've been hearing from people all over the world, from Sweden and Japan and, of course, in many cities across the U.S. that have been inspired by the website and the work and are doing it themselves. So really, it's just the small steps that we can take that are multiplied out by the millions. And I'm hoping that at a certain point, there will be, you know, hundreds of thousands of groups like Planting Justice in cities across the world. And really, that's what's going to make the change. So we just want to be, you know, one beam of light that is going to inspire people to do what we're doing and to try to create those models that, you know, are able to fund itself and create good paying jobs while we're doing the work so that it can be something that other people can do.
You know, I think that, you know, you talk about the 100 gardens that you can sort of claim as things that you've actually begun, but you've also touched upon the ripple effect, which I think sometimes we don't even have the capacity to, you've influenced people from all over the world and people are replicating some of the things that you're doing on the West Coast, but you probably don't know, like 1% or 5% of the people that you've impacted. So we never really get to know how many people are impacted by the work that we do, the positive messages that we put out there. I'm pretty certain that it's much, much bigger than you think. Was there any part of you that resisted moving in this direction? I mean, starting your own business as young as you were at the time, was it just, did you have any doubts or I mean, you probably had never started a business before. Maybe you had, but,
no, so I never all, had, no.
So
and luckily, you know, I had the support of family and friends and of people around me who saw the vision and wanted to help. It's definitely something that I couldn't have done on my own. So the first steps was to really create a network, a community of people who had skills that I didn't have, you know, talking to people who had started their own businesses or were managing large nonprofits and, you know, could really school me in a lot of the things that I would need to know in order to manage one myself. And all of that, you know, I learned once from, you know, a mentor who's really important to me that, you know, if you have a vision, you need to find one other person who shares that vision wholeheartedly with you, and then those two people will turn into 10. And once you reach that point, then you've got a network, you know, and 10 can turn into 100 just as easily as 2 turned into 10. So, you know, it was really identifying, you know, what resources were available, and mainly, you know, human resources, what people were around me who shared the vision and had skills that I didn't have. And really, you know, it was just about having faith that that the work that we wanted to do in the world was needed and that it was in, you know, our services would be in demand. And we didn't know any of those things when we started, you know, and we started with a Craigslist ad and a borrowed truck from a friend and tools. Luckily, we had a tool lending library here. One of the public libraries lends out shovels and power drills, just like they lend out books. And so, you know, we didn't have any of that. We maybe had $500 in capital to start our business. And that's something that is really important, that other people can do that too. You know, the barrier to entry in building gardens and building community wherever you live is very low. And that's one of the beautiful things about it. You know, obviously we had a lot of privilege and in our educational upbringing and things like this. But that's part of our mission too, is sort of redistribute our privilege and to make this work something that other people can step into and become leaders. And, you know, those ripple effects, you can't possibly know. You know, I mean, just for one example, I've been so inspired by the men that we work with at San Quentin. And, you know, I started going into the prison 3 years ago with Halle and Beth Waitkiss, who runs a project called the Insight Garden Program. And she's been gardening at San Quentin for the last 9 years. And Halle and I started going in and teaching classes and working in the garden with them and starting to meet some of the guys. And the first guy who paroled from the Insight Garden Program onto a position at Planting Justice, his name was Jeff Rutland. And that was about a year and a half ago. And, you know, it's probably the hardest thing that somebody could do is to come out of prison with no money, no job, and a community that, you know, isn't necessarily supportive of healthy lifestyles, and to figure out ways to not end up back in prison. And so Jeff is our first guy, and he worked with us for a year, and we watched him get his own apartment and get back on his feet. And since that time, he's become a tremendous community leader in Richmond, one city over from Oakland, and he's doing all kinds of work with a faith-based social justice organization that is, you know, making a huge difference in their community, and actually, you know, rewriting citywide policies on reentry programs. So him going through, you know, reentry back into society from prison, he's now affecting policy that is affecting, you know, hundreds of other people who are returning to prison and making sure that they have the services they need. And we had no idea what to expect when, you know, the first day on the job, his first week out of prison, his first day on the job with Planting Justice, we had no idea what to expect. And yet now here's somebody who's, you know, affecting, you know, hundreds of lives. And so that's just one example, you know, and to be able to, you know, create a space for that leadership to become real, you know, and these are longings that Jeff has had, you know, something that he's wanted to do for a long time, and now he's able to do it. It's just, we feel really blessed to be in that position. Well,
and, you know, the thing that I'm reminded of hearing that story is that the ripples of the ripples of the ripples, that's when you actually really lose touch of the impact that you've had, because you think of all the people now that have been touched by his work who have touched other people, and then it expands in such a sort of glorious, incredible, beautiful way that it's pretty exciting. And to realize that every single person, every single person has that potential and that ability and that power to create those kinds of ripples, no matter what they're doing with their life, no matter where they've sort of directing their energies. It's like that ability, that power to create those ripples is like, to me, it's like an incredible gift that we all have that we underutilize, because we maybe sometimes don't realize we have got that great power to make things happen.
It's true. And that's how the large changes will eventually get made, is with, you know, enough people doing small, positive, tangible, solution-oriented work in their communities, and having, you know, a few dozen to a few hundred, you know, positive impacts on the people around them who then go out and do the same thing. And that's really how we're going to, you know, come over to the other side and really figure out ways to live, you know, sustainably and, you know, and peacefully with one another going forward. And there's some really, you know, major challenges that humanity faces. And so not only is it like a material sort of work, you know, we're building gardens, we're growing this many hundreds or thousands of pounds of food and creating this many jobs, but it's a spiritual process too, because it really forces us to, you know, take a deeper look at what it means to be alive in 2011 and 2012, what it means to be a human being even, you know, and growing food and, you know, has always been a central part of what it means to be, you know, a human being. And, you know, that's just sort of a means to reconnecting and realizing that we're a part of all life around us and that we're a part of nature, even though, you know, it seems that human beings have become really good at, you know, fooling themselves into thinking that we're not. Yeah, so that's something that is the ripple effects that happen sort of spiritually. And, you know, while we're doing the work, while we're building gardens and transforming, you know, physical space, there's also a personal transformation that's happening inside when you can really see the results of your work and see how you're benefiting, you know, your community. Something happens inside too. And so,
Gavin, I want to go back to that, the concept of finding those 10 sort of crucial contexts to sort of begin. But before I ask you that, I know that there are going to be people listening to this that are excited about what you're doing, and they might want to help you do more of it. And if they go to your website, is it clear to people how they can get engaged? I guess I should ask you first, can people get engaged with your work that may not live in your neighborhood? Is it
absolutely
possible?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few key ways. You know, first is, you know, just taking a look, if this is something that really speaks to you that you want to do in your community, you know, please contact us with any questions that you have. Take a look at all the educational resources that exist on our website and use them. You know, that's one key way. Another is if you're in a position where you have money to donate, we, you know, are a 501c3 nonprofit where, you know, you receive a tax deduction for making donations, and that can all be done through the website as well. And it's sort of this belief that, you know, if enough people are giving small amounts, we ask people to become sustainers at $5 or $10 a month, you know, which is just the price of, you know, a couple cups of coffee. But when enough people are doing that, that's how you create a really resilient organization. We never wanted to be dependent, you know, just on a couple foundations or a couple major donors, because, you know, in economic downturns like this, you know, things happen and that money, you know, isn't there any longer, and you have to start laying people off and, you know, cutting programming. And so we, from the beginning, were really conscious in designing a program that would be really decentralized in its funding and would fund itself, really. So, yeah, those are two key ways, is, you know, to be in contact with us, ask us any questions about whether, you know, it's how to start a nonprofit, or, you know, how to transform a lawn into a garden, no matter what it is, you know, we're open to questions. And you can email us, the contact info is there. And also, awesome. If you have money to donate, that goes a long way.
And I love the concept of a little bit of money. It is definitely just as valuable and just as much help as a bigger amount. So that's a great approach. Let's go back to that. And we just got a couple minutes left, Gavin, but that concept of finding those contacts, that reminded me, because your contacts, you were surrounded by the people that you needed. You just had to connect with them and find them. They were already there in your life. And that reminded me of a Marianne Williamson quote. People are always asking her, you know, how do I find my ministry? And she said, open your Rolodex. And I guess Rolodex is an outdated word now, but her point was, the people, your ministry, you're surrounded by your ministry. It's already there. You don't have to go searching for it. You just have to sort of open your eyes to it. And from that core group of 10 contacts, obviously many, many more people have joined your cause and are helping you move it forward. In the 2 minutes we have left, tell me a couple of the exciting things that you hope to see happen in the next year or two.
Well, so we started off building gardens, you know, on other people's land, be it schools, churches, people's homes. And we've been building our own next phase of acquiring more land ourselves for Planting Justice, to do an intensive urban farm on multiple acres. So there's two different sites we're looking at right now. One is a 10-acre parcel and one is a 3-acre parcel. So we hope to build an intensive urban farm that's growing hundreds of thousands of pounds of organic food. But more than that is a educational training center where groups of people can come and do longer stays with us to really learn all the pieces of the puzzle of what it takes to start their own urban farm, and that we can then be, you know, sort of an incubation center for new groups of people to replicate our work, whether it's here in the Bay Area or in any city. And so in that way, we can, create sort of a structural shift where people are, you know, able to start their own cooperative businesses that are, you know, using a model that's already been proven to be successful and capable of funding itself. So that's, Gavin, that's the next stage.
Awesome, Gavin. We have to wrap things up, but I love the work that you're doing. I love you and Halle, and we'll have you come back on our radio show and tell us more about your plans for the future. But keep doing the good work that you're doing, and we'll be in touch real soon.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul. Have a lovely day.
All right. Thank you all for being with us on Begin With Yes, and we will see you next time right here.